Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
And I am tonight's co-host, Dr. JP.
Dr. JP. And I've never really looked forward more to an episode than this episode, being ghosted with Dr. JP. Welcome to the podcast.
This is great.
Yeah, it's been a minute since you've been on the show.
Been a few years. Actually, I'm disappointed it's taken this long.
I am too. Actually, what's funny is I remember you came on the show and I recorded outside on my deck.
Yes. And I recorded inside
on your basement. You were in your basement though.
Yeah, it was like in the basement workshop on the phone, and you're like, yeah, I'm having some cocktails, having a good time. And it was like a work night, so I was being super serious.
It was Tuesday.
It was Tuesday or something. So I've got to be super serious and solely so cool.
No, but not that.
No, it sucked.
I drink a lot of cocktails on weekdays.
That's a smart move.
Sorry for partying.
Mm-hmm.
All right, JP, so what's good? Tell me about your practice. Tell me about your life. What are we talking about tonight?
You know this. So my path took me down this route of multiple practice ownership. Which a lot of people are super
really
excited about. And I was really into it. Right at the peak, we were 5 practices and running around like crazy people. And it seems so fun and exciting. And everyone's telling me how you're killing it. And then
5 practices.
Mm-hmm. And That's then you insane. Look at the financial statements at the end of the year and say, I'm not actually killing it. And then you look at how much time you spend for that reward and you say, I'm actually not killing it at all. I'm killing myself. So, over the course of the last couple of years since we talked last, I've significantly divested things and much smaller now than I was before. And I'm actually back to practicing full time in one location.
Was that mentally hard?
It was a catastrophic shift because I had reached the point where I was comfortable saying, I'm done practicing clinical dentistry.
You were going to be a business owner.
We're going to be a business owner, right? We're going to own a business. I was going to run the thing, hire people, have a team around me. And next thing you know, it's gone, right? It's gone because it's not sustainable, or it wasn't for me at least.
Why was it sustainable? What was the hardest part about that?
The hardest part was imparting my vision on the team, because that's not something that is innately built in within most dentists. It certainly wasn't built within me.
It's the reproduction of you.
Yeah. So I had this vision of what I wanted the business to look like and each practice to look like. Wanted it to look like a replication of the main flagship office. And each doctor, each team, while they were really good and they were skilled in their own ways, they weren't me. And that's no fault of their own. And at the time...
And that's not you trying to brag either.
No.
It's just a matter of get the vision of what
it's worth. But at the time, I took it really personally. What's wrong with you? Why can't you do it my way? Why can't you just figure it out? Just do it. This is what you have to do. And I spent so much time and effort trying to force that on everyone. And it took a lot of time and kind of reflection to say, that's not really realistic, right? It's not possible to expect everyone to do things my way and to understand my way of doing it as the business owner, as the owner doctor, the founder.
Do you think that was a mistake more on your part, or that was a mistake more on just understanding? Because obviously it works for corporations and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So what is it that... What was it that didn't work in regards to that? Or what would you have done differently?
I think the expectations were really high.
Okay.
They were incredibly high.
Your expectations
were incredibly high. and probably unrealistically high.
From a production standpoint, profitability standpoint, or
no, from a culture standpoint, okay. You know, expecting everyone to treat their practice as
like
if
it was theirs,
like it was theirs, and it's not. They're an employee. Right? A doctor's an employee. The associate is an employee.
That's a hard concept, yeah, because most don't look at it that way.
And that's okay, right? It's actually okay that they are comfortable being the associate employee.
Sure.
So it took a lot of realization for me to say, I have a couple of choices. One, I can lower my standards. And we can be like a lot of the other groups that are super profitable, provide excellent care, take care of the team, the patients, everyone, but they just don't have quite the same maybe level of expectations as I did. So that was one option. I didn't really like that. Option two was to double down again and to really get after it, like completely give up clinical practice, spend every minute of my time training people, trying to get them on board with the way that I did things.
Because ultimately the goal here is to get to multipliers, right? So it's not even about making them that profitable. It's just about getting them to some level of profitability and owning more practices.
There was that, but sir, this was also my day job. So I needed to make a living. So that was option two. Option three was start to sell things off and get back to the basics a little bit. And that's ultimately what I did. And it was a kick in the teeth. It was a big time kick in the teeth to go from this, like, you know, five practice thing. We did a startup. I had practices all over. At one point we had 52 employees.
Gosh.
It was a big enterprise for little old me.
Yeah. Right?
Just for me.
It's a lot.
Total bootstrap, the whole thing. Was preparing to get funding from a couple of different private equity people, a couple of venture capitalists that were super interested in investing in this company. And once I saw what I would have to give up from a ideal standpoint, from my vision standpoint, it didn't make a good business sense to me. It didn't feel right. I couldn't sleep at night. And so ended up passing on that opportunity to sell the company, which was actually my parachute. Was the
that was the goal.
That was the goal. It was the parachute that I was looking for. And it certainly wasn't like JP was going to retire at 32 kind of money. It was at 32 when this happened. But it was, life was going to be pretty easy. And to say no to something like that was really hard. And looking back at it right now, I'm pretty happy I did it. Because I can sleep at night. I feel good about the decision I made. And on top of all that, practicing now full time, being back in the practice with my team, with my patients, I realize that's what I'm good at.
So what's the message to the person, I mean, the he or she dentist out there? Because like this is obviously a very, for some reason or another, it's a big goal of a lot of people to like own multiple practices
because
multiple practice ownership is like a big deal. What's the message to them? Like what would you say to them?
The message that I'd have is be careful what you wish for, right? Be careful what you wish for, because on paper you can make things look as good as you want. And that's what we did. On paper, I had five practices. Profitability was through the roof. The valuation was crazy. But that was on paper. That wasn't what it felt like every day when I walked into the office. That wasn't what it felt like every day when I had conversations with a doctor about how they could do better and why are you missing this opportunity? And those kind of things really weighed on me a lot more than I thought they would, because on paper, it makes sense. But once you're in the moment, it's a totally different ballgame.
Would you do it differently now? Would you have gone back and not done that? Or
no, there's a few things that I know I would have done differently. Like if I could go talk to myself 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious.
I would have said, you need to.
Like, don't do a startup down
don't,
there.
Don't do a startup at this particular location when you're still struggling to get the other four to a true cash flow positive figure. But you know, outside of those things, I think the cultural things that I missed would have been really important. So
what are those?
One, I would have insisted on bringing in the associate doctors as partners. We would have done, rather than a DSO, it would have been more of a DPO.
Like you tried to be sole provider.
I was the sole owner with associates. It was all associates.
I want to say that if we go back 2 years, I said that on the podcast.
I may not have said that. If we rewind the tape, which I'm sure you have the capability to do, we could probably find a clip.
Go back to episode like 30 something and you'll probably hear it. I bet that was more because that's one of my and part of it is because I practice what I preach, right? A little bit, it's like, if I truly want to be vested in something, then like ultimately I want to have some level of ownership. So like for me, I had a conversation with an interview with a potential associate this week, right? Like, so we're hiring, you know, we're looking for somebody to come into our practice. And like on some level, it would be hypocritical for me not to have some opportunity for ownership, right? Because like if you listen to this podcast one time, like I'm a proponent of ownership. So like it would be hypocritical for me not to do that. So like, you know, that's a challenge there. So, okay. So not being the sole person in it. Okay. What else?
Yep. Having a little bit more grounded goals, right? I went into this again as an early 30 something thinking I was going to take over the world in 2, 3, 4 years. And really the focus should have been a little bit more focused on what I had at the moment.
Was it fundamentals, new patients? What do you think was the struggle or just, is it leadership?
It was a leadership issue. And I was a really, this was the hardest thing to realize is that I was a really bad leader. I wasn't focused on what I had, and I was worried about too much about what I was going to get.
For the young aspiring multi-practice owner, on some level, what leadership do we have?
We don't have much, right? And the hard thing is when you're a sole proprietor in your own practice, you can rally 4, 5, 6 people around you. You can rally your team.
You can
rally your team just by being charismatic because you're there every day.
Is the drive money for that? Is that what's the drive in multi-practitionership?
At first I thought it was money. It's not actually money. It's the excitement for me, at least. It was the excitement. It was the acquisition, making the deal. It was finding a new acquisition, helping, feeling like you were helping some doctor. Sure. By buying their practice. Yeah. And like giving an opportunity to a young doctor that, you know, you want to see be more like you.
Sure.
And so it was like the thrill of the hunt more than anything. And that's all good. Like those are still exciting things to me.
Oh, for sure. Those are super good aspirations.
And look, do I see a world where I could still be very involved
in multiple practices? That was my next question. Did you get back into it, you think?
Absolutely. But with such a different mindset and focus. I mean, the last 5 years I've been kicked in the teeth. I've nearly lost everything. We got to a point where we reached the low, like we bottomed out. I had 4 practices. I didn't know how I was going to make payroll. Thank God, right? I was able to see the writing on the wall and kind of pull myself out of this like tailspin and like this destructive path I was going on and just say, God damn it, this is not the right way to go. And it's time to focus back on the fundamentals, be a dentist again, be a leader in the practices, actually show up and act like a practicing dentist, act like the leader of the practice. And in doing that, it was wild to see how quick things turned around. On top of that, then started selling off some of the practices that were giving me the most amount of headaches and that were the least profitable. And all of these things kind of coalesced in the last 12 months.
Do you think the skill set's different? Meaning like the skill set for, and obviously to be a good clinical dentist, you got to have X skill set. Do you think that you're there was something different that you could have done from that standpoint? Like you're better at the clinical dentistry aspect of it versus the business dentistry after it, or was it just the timing of everything?
It's both, right? There's certainly, we're trained to be technicians.
Yeah.
We are owners,
right?
We are totally trained to be technicians. Sully, all of the CE you and I have done.
Yeah, it's clinical.
Is clinical based. Yeah. And yeah, some team things and some like case acceptance, but it's clinical. It's clinical based. Mm-hmm. It's how do we do more clinical dentistry?
Yeah.
And we don't spend time on how to run a business because frankly, I don't know what kind of options there are that are worthwhile, because I found myself getting sucked into a lot of almost schemes, right? Where you would like go and listen to some guy at a presentation.
Have a business ownership.
Totally.
Retreat.
Totally. And you listen to people that are telling you how easy it is. Oh, go get another practice. Get a third one. Get a fourth one. It's so easy. Like build the multiple. Build the, you know, just get your bottom line high enough and you'll sell out and you go retire on an island. And you're listening to bad advice from people that honestly haven't done it before. And you buy into it. And you forget about the things you're good at, which are clinical dentistry and connecting with your patients, because that's what I'm good at. That's what you're good at. And I firmly believe that's why we've succeeded as dentists the way we have.
So you start to phase out. Mm-hmm. You're divesting these practices. Is there a moment where you're like, well, this makes total sense because everything's starting to uptick again once I'm in the practice. Yeah. Like, what does that look like as your divestiture?
Yeah. So last July, almost a year ago, sold off the last of the, it was
are
the
you
most,
making,
it was the
all,
most
and
recent.
All transparent, like, yeah. You don't have to answer this necessarily, but like, are you making money on these? You losing money on these? Like when you're divesting these, what does that look like?
So had five practices. The first one that I sold off to get the four, pretty much broke even. The next one made a little bit of money. The third one thought I made money, but then turns out that after I had to pay the doctor off for all kinds of things after the closing, I actually lost money.
Okay.
Now we have two, right? Now I've got
So basically, probably after the first three,
like I haven't written a check, like it's fine, but in the long run, I've lost a lot of money. Because it's a lost opportunity.
I was going to say, it's a lot of freaking time. Three practices, I mean, like, yeah.
All right, so a year ago, I get rid of the most recent transaction, and that brings me to two. And I reinsert myself back into my original practice, right near my home. It's the one that's always made sense. A couple miles from home. It's where I know people. It's where I've made the best relationships. And reinsert myself there a few days. Not there full time, but you know, took 2-3 months to kind of ease back into like this new life of being close to home. Because before that, I was commuting an hour and a half each way, 4 days a week, just to keep this place alive. Sold it. Now I'm back at the home base and realized that the associate I had in there really wasn't a great fit. And good doctor, just not a good fit. And so we made the call a couple months after I was in there. Part ways. It was a tough conversation, but ultimately it was the right thing to do. So now for the last 7 months, even coronavirus included, I've been in there as the full-time clinical lead doctor. I have an associate there 3 days a week, does the bread and butter dentistry, helps me out. He's a great doctor, great relationships, but not doing the type of work that you and I do, sure, that we love. But he frees me up to do that kind of work. And by focusing solely on that practice, the thing's doing probably 2.5-3 times what it was before
I
got in
up
there.
We're this up. Year, even with a month off.
This year, with 2.5 months off, we are up 30% from 2019 to this point. And it's bonkers. And we're not doing exotic stuff. We're not doing, you know, we're doing like 2 or 3 full arches a quarter. Like we're not doing big, huge, crazy cases.
So what's the plan with the second remaining practice?
Where's so the remaining practice, there's some things on the table. I would love to keep it as a satellite office with the right doctor, but I'm not entirely sure I'm going to be able to make that work. So exploring some options about selling either to a local doctor that wants to absorb the practice, possibly bring somebody in from outside the fold that wants to practice there. I own some real estate up there, so it's a little bit, you know, it's a little muddy. We've got to take care of the real estate. I've got to take care of the practice. I've got to take care of the patients first and foremost. I mean, my biggest concern is the patients there, making sure they're taken care of. So hopefully that will be behind me soon so that I can, again, refocus on this one practice that is really doing well and see where we go from there.
So let's talk about that. So you go from, you graduate, they can hear the crazy part of like that saga of GPR, residency, quitting residency, moving, thinking about taking a job, moving back home and, you know, whatnot. You know, you go for this goal of multiple practice ownership and now we're staging back. What becomes next? Like, what do you feel like then for you? I mean, you know, now how many years out of dental school are you?
10 years.
10 years out of dental school. What then becomes, what now become the goals for you from a clinical practice standpoint?
Yeah. So clinically, I want to, number one, take this practice and just refine what we're doing. Because we do a really good job with our patients, but I think we succeed in spite of ourselves. We make it too difficult. We're spending too much time at the practice. The team is there too much. They're stressed. They're tired. And I need to really reflect on how to relieve that from them. Because it doesn't feel good to know that my assistant is bogged down and feels like she can't even, you know, she's got to submit orders for Patterson from home because she feels like she can't do them at the office. Yes,
part of that's system, team size, exactly, roles, exactly. Just a lot of that stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. It's getting, again,
fine-tuning this stuff.
Back to the basics and fine-tuning it, which is pretty exciting, right? Because I've never done that.
Well, and frankly, what I want to like note on that is like, it does boil back to fundamentals. And like, we can talk all day long about X, Y, or Z clinical hard procedure, but ultimately the success of most practices live and die by fundamentals.
There's no doubt. And we have been a victim of ignoring the fundamentals and reaching for the things that we love to do. You know, investing time, money, effort into a sleep program, which is great and I fully believe in and the team believes in. But why are we spending all this time, effort, money building that when we don't have our scheduling protocol in place?
Sure.
Basic restorative, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
We need to refine those things so that we can then go after the next.
Well, that's always been my big thing. Is like, I look at offices and I'm like, oh, we're trying to spend more money in marketing to bring in more patients. And I'm like, well, one, you're not doing half the shit you could do on the patients you do have. And two, you're not scheduling appropriately, or you're not getting enough case acceptance because you're not diagnosing enough, or, you know, whatever it is. Like, you're not, point end up being is you're not fundamentally using the patients you have to begin with the fullest.
Precisely.
So why would you go worry about bringing in more patients when you're not even using the ones you have?
That's exactly it. And again, it's because we lose track of what we have and we're so worried about what we want. And it kind of comes back to that's the way that people our age are
wired a little bit,
right? Like, we are reaching for,
we tend to bet
the next thing.
Yeah.
And when in reality, the true fact of the matter is I've never been more happy than I am right now with a pretty bread and butter practice.
Yeah.
We do some implants. We do some sleep. We do some clear aligners. We'll do a couple of arches and full arch implants a quarter. We're not, we're not a mega, mega, mega practice. Yeah. But God, we have fun and yeah, we're helping patients out. And I love this. And it's really been refreshing for me to get back to that. And for me, I hope that this is going to fuel refining what I'm doing in this practice and getting somebody into the practice to work with me as a partner. right? And whether they're truly a partner or an associate.
That's interesting, though.
But getting somebody in there that really, really understands what I'm trying to do.
Do you miss the five practices? You miss like the
There's times I do. And that weighs on me a little bit because the hustle and bustle, there's still something fun about it. And there's something magic about it and making deals happen.
Is that that's just you personality?
It's probably a me thing, right? It's like a drug. It's a big time high, right? Because you know, with five practices, there's always going to be a problem. Yeah. And now we've got to solve the problem, right? Let's solve the problem. And the downside to that is that the bigger you get, the bigger the problems get and the more frequent they become. Yeah. So you've got, instead of one problem a week, you've got 10 problems a day. And then it's not fun. The high becomes a low, right? So, you know, I enjoy the idea of having multiple practices and helping people, but there's got to be a better way than the way that I did it.
Well, the challenge too is, JP, is like what we don't talk about much is like you have an expanded skill set that if you're going towards multiple practice ownership and you have this big expanded skill set and you can't leverage it or utilize it because you're the manager, what's the point of having some big expanded skill set, right? Like, and dentistry is always a weird thing anyways, because like in a lot of practices, you have the dentist as the technician, the owner, and like they play, like they wear a lot of different hats. And so like one of your strengths is the technician. That's one of my strengths. Like you and I both have like really, that's not to brag, but like we both have pretty expanded skill sets to where like if you take us out of the chair on some level, we're underutilizing our skill sets.
We're not underutilizing our skill sets. We're ignoring our best skills.
Yeah. It's a great
point.
We're
ignoring our best skills and
we're not leveraging what we've been trained to do.
For me, it was so easy, right? Like, look, I love to place implants. I feel like that's really my clinical strength. So it should be so easy to just go to the five practices and say, book me implants.
Yeah.
Book them. Diagnose them, treatment plan them, get a financial arrangement in place.
Yeah.
Let me show up and I'll have a surgery ready. You'll set the surgery up and I'll just do it, right? It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't because
it's interesting.
Because I'm not there to touch the patient. And even though in the practice now, I rarely am the one to talk to them about the need for an implant or how we're going to do it. That's all done by the assistant.
Yeah.
I'm still there to pop my head in the room, wave, and say, don't worry, you got some of the best around to take care of you. Misty's going to take care of you. She's going to get this all set up.
Right.
We're on the same page. Do you have any questions for me? 99 times out of 100, they say, nope, she's answered my questions. I feel good.
Boom, we're off.
Boom, we're done. And that's for single implant, multiple implants, or a full arch. It's just done. But because we're there, we can direct it. And if you're not there, it won't happen. And that was the pitfall that I fell into.
If you're a new grad graduating tomorrow, what do you do?
Oh, man.
Corporate, find an associate, buy startup. What do you do?
With all this,
the
current environment,
you're $400,000 in debt. What do you do?
The current environment is really going to make this difficult, I think, for the new grads. They're going to have to, it's going to be hard. It's going to be a gut check because there are going to be a lot of skilled doctors that are going to have to take a step back probably and look at this more pragmatically and say, this is a bump in the road, but it's going to be a bump for the next year, 2 years maybe. And we've seen it. You've probably seen it. There's a huge need for hygiene. There's a huge need for basic restorative care to get caught up. Doctors that had bigger aspirations of coming out of dental school and owning their own shop and just going to town might have to take a position where they're doing hygiene. Where they're doing basic restorative. And look, it's easy to say that now, Sully.
I know, but F that. But
dude, if you didn't have a job.
I guess.
If you didn't have a job and you just got out of school, With that diploma?
I struggle with that one.
That's hard.
I didn't go to dental school to freaking be a
hygienist. None of us did. But if there's not a job, what are you going to do?
Right? I don't know.
So it's an interesting thought.
It is. Look, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to be frank and like, I'm not freaking doing that shit. Maybe it's, I don't know. I don't know what the currency, I don't know what corporate's hiring. I don't know what normal, obviously I know that normal dentists are not hiring as much or they're not selling their practices or whatever. It's definitely a different time. I struggle with that mindset as I'm trying to, it's a limiting mindset. So like if it's a super short term view, maybe, but like, I don't know.
I mean, if you need a job and the loan payment's coming due next month, what do you do?
Oh yeah. No, I get that. Right. And I get that. If push comes to shove, you freaking survive.
Yep.
I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I'm just saying from on a grand scheme of things of what I'm trying to set myself up for, I don't want to do that.
No. And I wouldn't advocate for anyone to do that, but I think the writing is on the wall. The times are going to be a little lean coming up.
Is your point ultimately that we should be a little more risk averse right now?
Is that what you're saying? I'm certainly being a little more risk averse.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Right. And you and I have talked about this offline plenty of times. The building that I was looking at and the growth plan that I had.
No, we've been cautious with ours now.
And it's changed your plan a little bit. Yeah. And it hasn't stopped your plan.
Sure.
And it hasn't stopped my plan. But it's shifted it.
Yeah.
And it's changed it a little bit. And that's what I think that's the message to younger doctors that have been out for 1 to 3 years. Because look, new grads are just going to have to do whatever they have to do right now, right? Like they've just got to survive. And new grads, I'm sorry, you might just have to survive for the next 6 months.
That's okay,
though. That's okay. Like you're going
to
make it.
This too shall pass.
Exactly. But you know, just do what you need to survive, and don't be too proud to do what you need to survive. Now, for the docs that are 1 to 3 years out,
that's a hard one.
Those
I know docs that like they were 2 years in an associateship looking to buy in. Next thing they let go.
Yep. So the risk averse though is also going to open up a lot of opportunities, right? So be on the lookout for the doctors that were close to retiring, selling their practice, or you know, with the current environment, just don't have the leadership that's needed to bring the team and the practice through this. Because we've talked so much about the need for leadership in this moment, and how important it is. And I think you and I have both seen the benefit of focusing on our practices. Like, I can't imagine what I would have been like if I had 5 practices when COVID hit. Oh my gosh. I obsessed.
And you only would have gotten one PPP, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. But I obsessed over the one practice I have right now.
Right.
And if I had 5,
you wouldn't have been sleeping.
Holy shit. I wouldn't have been sleeping. I would have fucked the whole thing up. Sorry.
No, we've been officially rated on iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're like explicit.
Oh, mature. Okay, good.
Mature.
So good.
Yeah.
So
you can say that. I apologize if you don't like those words. I'm not advocating those words. I'm saying like we Millennial Dentist Podcast is an explicit rating.
So
it's just a fact.
So
we get deep.
It was it would have been next to impossible for me to expend that kind of energy and effort, and I would have screwed it up for the whole bigger group. So, you know, right now, those doctors that don't have that leadership could open some doors for the next crop that have the leadership, that have it within themselves to take over a practice at a troubling time, at a difficult time, and to flourish because they have a unique charisma or selling proposition for the patients.
Yeah.
Or maybe a unique clinical skill set or something.
What is, you know, we've both of us are huge proponents of technology, obviously, and we're all about that shit. But like, what if you're a dentist graduating, getting into this, or just not even like a young dentist, but you're a dentist, it's like, you know, I need to do something in my practice, like take it to the next level. What's the one piece of technology that you're implementing, buying? Maybe a better question to ask is what moves the needle in your practice?
Yep. The answer today is the same answer that I've had for years, which is incredible. It hasn't changed. It's Conebeam. It's a 3D x-ray machine, because the ability to identify situations for patients, the conversations that it opens up, the doors that it opens up for your patients and your team that you didn't have before are just innumerable, right? So
give me an example.
So implants, easiest thing, implants, number one.
Every new dentist wants to place implants.
Every new implant, and every new dentist wants to place implants. Every new dentist should learn how to place implants, quite frankly, because it's pretty easy. And by the way, if you want to learn about implants,
new dentists.
Go to www.3ddentist.com. There you will find out quite a bit about a 3-week-long digital implant continuum, where you'll learn how to not only place implants, but place implants the right way with a surgical guide, with a CT, with a plan.
Live patient surgery.
Hands-on live patient surgery, extractions, bone graft, and implant placement, all under the supervision of Dr. Sully Sullivan, the millennial dentist. Plus, you get to hang out with us, swim in the hot tub, do backflips, into the pool, record some shit, drink Truly, which brings you the millennial, I call it Truly, all of the above, which brings you this incredible podcast. So the point being, Conebeam is going to open the doors for these young docs that in practices where they've been relying on nothing more than routine x-rays. You bring 3D x-rays in. Look, maybe you place implants, maybe you don't. Maybe you just want to restore more implants. Well, Conebeam is going to help with that, because you're going to find failing endos. You're going to find lesions that the patient never knew about. You're going to find split teeth that patients didn't know about, because guess what? You see cracks in teeth with a Conebeam.
It's so funny.
Believe it or not, to all of the taco-loving dentists out there, you can see cracks in teeth on Conebeam.
You know what's crazy? We were joking earlier. Jeff and I were in the hot tub. We're like, we should just start moving and buying practices and selling practices. It's like, I'm going to be super frank really quickly. Conceptually, it's not that hard to be successful in dentistry right now. Like, I want to burst some bubbles real quick. It's just not that difficult. And what I mean by, like, and I'm not trying to like hurt people's feelings, do whatever. Like, it's two things. It's communicate with patient, have skill set to deliver. Communicate with patient, skill set to deliver. So now what do we need to do that? So communicate with patient, that means, okay, I need to be able to talk to the patient and not be a dumbass. That's exhibit A.
That's important. Correct. Okay.
But then I also need tools to do that. That may be digital camera, mm-hmm. that may be Conebeam. Okay. These are things that I need to do. And then frankly, then it's skill set to deliver. It's I've diagnosed A or B problem. I have skills to deliver. JP, can you do a filling?
Yes.
Can you do a crown?
Yes.
Can you do a root canal?
Yes.
Can you do an implant?
Yes.
Can you do a C implant?
Yep.
Can you do a little ortho?
Yep.
Can you do bone grafts?
Mm-hmm.
Can you do a laser lip tie. Yep. Can you do Botox and Juvederm?
Sure.
Can you do sedation dentistry?
Yep.
Can you do IV sedation?
Not yet. Not yet.
Get you on there.
Let's go.
But the point being is, like, ultimately, like, what you sit there and you're like, well, shit, this dude can do a lot. Well, no joke. That's why he's successful. Like, I can communicate that dentistry needs to be done. And guess what? I've worked my ass off to do skill set that dentistry needs to deliver. That's what makes it successful. Like, it's easy. So if I'm X or A or B dentist and I'm trying to, like, figure out how to make my way, it's okay. What do I need to do to convey to my patients the dentistry that needs to be done, and can I do the dentistry? Yeah. And so if I can do all the dentistry, then I need to focus on why do I suck at conveying the dentistry that needs to be done.
Correct. Yep.
Or if I can convey the dentistry that needs to be done, I need to learn how to do the damn dentistry.
Figure out how to do
it. It's not that hard.
hard.
If you can't do root canals, guess what?
Learn how to do them.
Go learn how to do a root canal. God damn it.
And so a lot of this is, it's technology driven. I mean, like implants is a huge, when you place a guide, you have the technology to do it and equipment to do it. Like it's relatively easy to do. Like you lower the skill set and need to do it. Right. That's good. But that's my problem, I guess, right now is like, I'm like, okay, it's not part of it is just is betting on yourself. We had this conversation with Dennis and I, it was like, why are we buying? Why are you sitting on practice potential buy in? Why are we buying in? Like you and I live in millions of dollars of student
millions
debt.
Of dollars of debt.
Millions. I mean, like that's a normal life for us because that cash flow is positive. Like at the end of the day, I need to know, can I diagnose the dentistry? And can I do the dentistry that I diagnose? That's it.
That's it. That's all. You boil it down really succinctly, and your story shows it too, right? And that's what I really hope so many young dentists get out of this. And I hope that they pay attention not to what necessarily you did and what specifically you did, but I hope that they see the story about how you did. You bet on yourself early on.
Well, that's
you bet hard on yourself. And you said, you know what? I busted my ass in dental school. And yeah, I've got it.
That's the beginning, though. That's the beginning. Yeah, like,
but you
busting
said,
your ass in dental school gets you to ground zero.
But Sully, you came out of dental school, and you had, to be honest, you had a great situation.
A great situation.
You got to go.
Dude,
practice
couldn't
with
have been better.
Dad.
Yes.
You get to.
Dude, I'll be the first one to admit that.
Awesome situation. You know what you did? You doubled down.
Exactly.
You freaking doubled down when most people would have been like, "Oh, okay, this is cool. I make a living."
Gasoline on the fire.
Some crowns and fillings. You went and spent more money on CE
right.
and spent more time in CE than most docs would do in 15, 20 years. And you did it in the first 2 years you were out.
Right.
And that propelled you, right? It propelled you to have that skill set. Yeah. And I really hope that some of the doctors right now that have the communication and skills are going to see the opportunity to say, you know what? Maybe I can't work quite as much right now. Maybe I'm not going to make quite as much money right now, but maybe that gives me more time. And it gives me more time to go learn the things I don't know. So I can go get IV sedation certified. I can go learn about endo and all the endo systems out there. And I can learn about adult ortho. And I can go do an implant course so I can do the basic implants. And we're not talking about exotic, crazy implants in their practice, but the onesie twosies that they are referring out right now. Learn all of that shit right now. And that's what the young doctors could take home and start doing. And that's going to set them up for success when all of this shit passes, because it's going to pass.
It does.
It's going to pass.
And ultimately, when push comes to shove, and when shit hits the fan and you are left with your ability to do what you do, and you're an associate, you've gotten fired and you're in the situation but you've got a skill set. Your ability to go out and do dentistry on patients is the biggest thing that you can do. And depending on the expansion of your skill set, the more opportunity you have to survive. And thrive, frankly. And that to me is like the biggest thing is like, I want to have every capability I have to be successful in the people that I can treat. And so I want to know, can I diagnose and communicate the dentistry that needs to be done? And then can I do that dentistry? And like, and I was telling some attendees this weekend about that. I was like, you know what? Ultimately, my CE journey, JP, was really predicated on my ability to not do something. So I thought I knew how to do what I needed to do. Well, then I would encounter a patient that needed something specific that I didn't know how to do. Well, then that drove my CE, right? So I was like, well, if I can't do it, I need to go learn how to do it. So that was the motivating factor for me. So like my message to people is that, yeah, if you can't do it and you're diagnosing it and you're goal is to grow or produce more or whatever it is, because that's important too, right? Like, we want, obviously, why are we doing this in the first place? But if that's your goal, which in most of us it is, and I have somebody who's willing to pay money to do it, and I don't know how to do it, I need to go and learn how to do it. That's it. End of story. I don't care if I like it, think I like it, don't like it. If someone's willing to pay me money, I need to go learn how to do it. And maybe, and there's a lot of stuff that I've learned how to do that I know I don't want to do. Adult ortho is one for me. I don't love adult ortho. I don't love liners. I don't love that. Like at the end of the day, like, I'd love to have an associate to do that, or like a team member. I don't love it. Maybe it's because I'm not good at it. I don't love it. So, like,
no, we all have those things that don't speak to us. For me, it's Botox. It's the cosmetic things like that. It just doesn't resonate with me.
We shoot you up a little bit. You'll change your mind.
If you get rid of this wrinkle in my forehead, this line where everyone knows that
that's easy.
A little pissed off when they see this thing.
You can bounce a quarter off my forehead.
Oh, I know it. you're frowning at me right now and pissed at me, and I get it. No, it looks like you're smiling.
No one knows.
No one knows. That's great. Let's go.
Fantastic.
But yeah, look. You're absolutely right. I think that's what we found out from the attendees at this implant course that we ran the last few three weekends.
Yeah,
that. They all came in, and this was what was so exciting. They all came in with that mindset of, we want to learn how to do this because we have patients in our practice right now.
Right, right.
That want us to do it.
Bingo. We are diagnosing X procedure.
We're sending it out because we can't do it. I want to do it. And yes, financially, it makes sense. Oh my gosh, yeah. But also, from a patient care standpoint, they want to be taken care of by their doctor. And it's really cool to see that happen. And that's what's got me so fired up about this weekend.
I love it.
Where we watched people place implants for the first time. And they've got them scheduled next week in their practice. They're going to take it home. It's awesome.
All right. Well, Jimmy, this has been a blast. Fun episode. We got to record more often.
I know. No, let's not go 2 years, 3 years, whatever, 4 years, whatever it was.
It's a little weird. Here we are. It's 2 a.m. in the morning.
And we're recording for the second time ever, even though we talk like a couple times a week.
But here's the deal. First off, we're grateful for you listening. If you love the podcast, which I hope you do, and you're listening, you made it this far, please go and review us. Share it with your friends. Give us a 5-star rating. You know, we need that shit. I don't ask for that much, but I'm asking for it now. And also, seriously, if you're looking to do more procedures, expand your skill set, I hope that you look at 3D Dentist as an opportunity and a curriculum that can do that. Specifically with implants. I mean, we are unbelievably excited about what we're doing with our implant continuum and guided surgery. And, you know, we've had a great group of people this weekend here, and we've been doing a lot of implants. So if that's something that you're interested in, please message me, talk to us, connect with us at 3ddentist.com. But that's kind of what we do, what we're here for. And other than that, that's all I got.
Sully, it's been a blast. This has been fun. I'm disappointed that you skipped the first two weekends of this continuum so that I could do it all on my own. And then I missed the first day of this weekend. And you're basically running the show. You're picking what rooms people are staying in the home. You're assigning attendees to certain people. And here comes a little poor little old JP after working a 5-day week and
putting it in place.
Not cool. But I love it. But I love being here with you. It's been a blast. It's a good time. And I can't reiterate enough. If people want to have a good time and learn some real serious clinical dentistry, please come check us out. We want to help you.
I agree. All right, everybody, work smarter, not harder. Check us out. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.